If you talk to any consultant, any producer, most everyone will tell you, you know, my goal is to reduce my replacement rate. And as a consequence of that line of thinking, a corollary has been, you don't need to produce as many replacement heifers. Well, on top of that, dairy producers have been experiencing this really big boom in value for beef cross calves. Now, as a consequence of that, we've seen some producers really become a bit overly aggressive at the breeding decisions and chasing some of these beef cross calves to the point where they've put themselves in a little bit of a hole of not having enough heifers.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Hi-D from DSM Firmenich optimizes vitamin D levels to increase milk yield, enhance calcium to phosphorus ratio, and strengthen immunity. With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com. Modern solutions for modern cows with AHV. Contact us to beat biofilm-related issues in your herd. Lallemand Animal Nutrition, partnering in microbial solutions for a changing world.
Hello and welcome back to the Dairy Podcast Show brought to you by Wisenetics. My name is Barry Bradford from Michigan State University. Today we're lucky to have two outstanding guests with us to talk about herd replacements and dairy. So first of all, I want to introduce Dr. Michael Overton. Dr. Overton is the Global Dairy Platform Lead in Precision Animal Health with Zoetis. Mike, thanks for joining today and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Barry. I'm happy to be here and so appreciate the opportunity.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you landed in this role? Maybe if people don't know you, that you're a veterinarian, you've done some work at a university. How did you end up in this kind of thing?
Yeah, so that's kind of a long story of my career, but I'll try to make it really short. I grew up on a very small dairy farm in North Carolina, milking 60 cows, my grandfather and then my dad, and interested in dairy at a very young age. But I was a veterinarian, graduated from NC State University, practiced for 8.5 years. Went to California, got an advanced degree there, did a residency, stayed on staff at UC Davis, then I went to University of Georgia. So I spent about 13 years in academia. I achieved full professor and then left within a year to go to industry. And between 8.5 years, 8 years at Elanco, and now 5.5 at Zoetis. But I left academia, which I really, truly love teaching. But I left because I had an opportunity to do some really neat things data-wise. And that's basically what I do now is a lot of economic modeling, data analytics, trying to help our customers, our producers become more profitable, more sustainable.
So one thing that's really neat about you, Mike, is like, you know, you can obviously talk about physiology and disease processes with anybody, but you stand out as someone who's really good with numbers. And like you just said, you stepped aside from your career path you were on to have some opportunities to work with huge data sets. What got you on that track?
Well, I've always been interested in numbers. When I was in college, I was deciding between engineering and veterinary medicine. And it's a funny story, but my high school guidance counselor told me I'd never make it in vet school. So once I enrolled as an engineering major at NC State and realized I actually made Dean's List there, I went, well, why can't I do this? I flipped over and never looked back. But I was fortunate to be exposed to an individual named John Fetrow when I was in veterinary school. And most everybody would recognize that name. John was a veterinarian MBA, but he did a lot of things, very progressive when it comes to economics and data. And he got me really interested. And from there, it just kind of continued to evolve. I've been fortunate to have a lot of exposure to really smart people throughout my career. And I've always been interested in numbers and how do I help producers help themselves.
All right. I want to introduce our other guest today. Welcome to the show to Megan Young, who serves as Voice of Customer for Valley Ag Software. And if that doesn't ring a bell for you, I'm sure you've heard of Dairy Comp, which is their most famous piece of software. Megan, thanks for joining today.
Thanks, Barry, for having us. We're really excited to represent VAS here and have a fun conversation with Mike and you.
So tell me about what does it mean to be voice of customer and how did you end up in that role?
Yeah, it's a great question. I get it a little bit of saying, what does the voice of customer really be for VAS? And I try to break it down as to anything that happens on the farm with any of our products or things that are happening that we should know about as far as industry trends, finding ways to incorporate that through our entire process at VAS. From the time that you look at any of our products to the time that you're actually behind a computer or on your mobile device or in the parlor or in the tractor, we want to make sure that your voice is heard and that each time we create or develop something for you, it's at your fingertips and it's easy to use.
Awesome. Good answer. So you ended up in this role. Was that because you were born on a dairy farm and you were milking from your first memory, or did you migrate into this from other backgrounds?
That's a great question. I like to say that our cultural generation skipped a little bit from my parents to me. I had always had a passion for ag, not that I grew up on a dairy, but I always enjoyed the crop side and the dairy and the animals. And After college, I had an internship at a dairy in Arizona, and I came out there after the internship to take a full-time position as payroll and HR, and then always morphing into more roles on the dairy, as you can imagine. It's never just one thing that you learn. Really got involved in the reproduction side and the breeding, and they also got Dairy Comp. So that's how I also found out about VAS early on in my career and fell in love with the team and the family that they have there and started as a support specialist. And now I've worked my way over to voice of customer on the product side for VAS.
Thanks for that background. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about this effort around herd replacement. Tell us about you and Mike working together on this and get us rolling on that topic.
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say back in my support days, we get questions often from producers saying, what's my cull rate? What's my replacement rate? How can I find XYZ in the program? And this is where part of the conversation started with Mike and I. I asked him if he'd be willing to do a webinar with VAS earlier this year. So we'll be referencing back to this webinar that you're welcome to watch. It's on demand through our VAS website. And this was a great way to get the conversation started about replacements. We wanted to talk about what is replacement rate, how is it actually calculated, how you can identify what replacements you have in your herd today, and then a little bit more about the economics behind it. Some of the questions I got were relating more to what are the reasons that my animals left the herd and how should I really analyze this versus what decisions or questions should we be asking before those determinations happened.
For over 40 years, VAS has helped dairy producers and their management teams turn data into decisions. Dairy Comp, the industry's leading herd management software, provides real-time insights to improve herd health and reproduction, streamlines workflows, and keeps your entire team connected. No matter the size of your operation, Dairy Comp helps you stay ahead. Because when you have the right tools, you can focus on what matters most. Your cows, your team, and your future. Learn more at VAS.com or talk to your VAS representative today.
Well, to dive into this, I think maybe it's important to try to put on our dairy manager hat and ask, you know, I have 50,000 things to deal with today. Somebody didn't show up to milk this morning. You know, I've got to get manure hauled. Why do I have to spend time thinking about replacement heifers?
Yeah, so you're right. Dairymen have lots and lots of things to do. But one of the things I've been trying to help them do is recognize opportunities beyond what might appear fairly obvious. So if you talk to any consultant, any producer, most everyone will tell you, you know, my goal is to reduce my replacement rate. And as a consequence of that line of thinking, a corollary has been, you don't need to produce as many replacement heifers. Well, on top of that, dairy producers have been experiencing this really big boom in value for beef cross calves. Now, as a consequence of that, we've seen some producers really become a bit overly aggressive at the breeding decisions and chasing some of these beef cross calves to the point where they've put themselves in a little bit of a hole of not having enough heifers. Now, this is something that's been coming really for the last, in my opinion, the last 5 years is when I've recognized this initially about 5 years ago, and it continues to kind of evolve. But herds that have really chased this beef breeding option now oftentimes find themselves in a bit of a hole of not having enough replacement heifers. And when they don't have enough replacement heifers, typically one of two things happens. Either A, they bite the bullet, go out and buy very expensive heifers these days that might be lower value than what they originally would have been producing. Or B, they go, I've already got a replacement heifer program. I'm not going to go spend more money elsewhere. And as a consequence of that, they end up keeping cows that should have been marketed 1, 2, 3, 4 months ago. They keep them longer in their herd. And when that happens, the productivity of their herd decreases. And this is something that's kind of difficult at times to quantify because it kind of sneaks up on someone. But it's definitely something that has truly occurred. And I was able to actually document this in a different presentation I did this year for another conference.
I get what you're saying. You hold a cow too long, she's kind of past her peak. She's going to make less milk. On the other hand, I'm going to say, well, my replacement rates are lower. My whatever that cost is, bringing new heifers through the pipeline, there's some decrease there. Like, how do you know this is a net loss?
That's a great point, Barry. So if I'm a producer or I'm a consultant, I typically try to focus on what can I reduce cost-wise. And that's what I'm referring to as explicit cost reduction. If I bring fewer animals in, I've got a lower, quote unquote, check to have to write for the new animals coming in. So I have a lower explicit replacement cost. What is a bit more difficult to quantify is how much milk am I not making because I'm keeping cows longer than I should have. Over the years, I've joked that if producers had a simple line item on their balance sheet that said, milk not made because of bad decisions, we would see a lot higher productivity, but that's not something that's easy to quantify. But the reality is, and I'll give you a quick example. This is something I've worked through before. But if a herd were to go from, say, a 38% replacement rate down to 34% replacement rate, the knee-jerk reaction year over year would be, hey, I've done a great job. And if they did that as a consequence of improving fertility and reducing mastitis and lameness and all those other things that lead to cows leaving prematurely, then kudos to them. But unfortunately, that's not typically the case. What I'm seeing more commonly is herds that have been, quote unquote, forced to reduce replacement rate because they simply don't have the heifers coming through the pipeline. And when that happens, going from 38 to 34, that means the average market cow is retained 110, 115 days longer on average than they would have at the 38%. And now if we factor in that 115 days at $2 per day, really easy estimate, it's significant at the lost opportunity. And that accounts for the added cost of replacement.
Okay, how does, at the same time as these beef cross calves have become super valuable, you know, the beef market has also driven up the value of cull cows. How does that factor into this?
So I was actually reviewing the notes from the webinar that Megan and I did just a few months ago. And when I looked at what I used for assumptions, I was looking at market cow values of $1.50, $1.60 a pound. We've got market cow values now, $1.80, $2. There are some herds receiving $2.20 plus per pound for Holstein cows going to market. Well, back a few months ago, I was still factoring in $3,500, $3,700 cost of replacements. But now the beef value for what's leaving the herd has increased to the point the net cost of that trade has actually gotten smaller. And as you said, as the beef cross calves have gotten increased in value, the Holstein heifers and bull calves have increased in value. So the gap has gotten smaller. And the market cows that they need to replace have just, we've never seen values this high before. It's unbelievable. It makes that trade in a lot easier to swallow, despite the really high ticket costs of a replacement heifer right now.
Yep. And I think probably a lot of people, at least quick reaction is to miss that, right? It's like you said, the pain of writing the check for that heifer hits a lot more than like being surprised that the revenue from the sale barn is more than you used to, probably.
That's what I've been trying to focus on, is looking beyond common benchmarks or goals people talk about to try to really better truly understand the opportunity to improve profitability. And that's where you got to consider the unanticipated effects of decisions we're making today, as well as a year, 2 years, 3 years ago.
Before we get into like how do we actually do some calculations, which I think we should cover, I think one really key point that I get frustrated with at even academic conferences is looking at things per cow, per lifetime of a cow, instead of, which I think is kind of one of your main points you're trying to get to, right? Instead of thinking about really your bottleneck is stalls in your barn or stalls in your parlor, right? And thinking about it in terms of that unit. Can you help us? Is there a good analogy you can use to help us understand how to think about it that way?
Well, the way I try to think about it is if I'm running a dairy, I've got limited slots for which cows can occupy in my dairy. The easiest analogy would be a simple tie stall barn. If I've got a 100 cow tie stall barn, obviously I want each of those stalls full of a cow, with a cow. Well, I could have this cow or I could have her replacement. So there's always this option of trade-in and so forth. So when we consider this trade-in opportunity, people want to focus on a cow and how long can I keep this cow? And if I want to focus on the individual cow's lifetime productivity, I'm going to make the mistakes in terms of the herd level profitability. Because if I keep a cow 6 months longer than she should have been retained, I get more from that individual cow. But if I look at the opportunity cost for that slot, I've cost myself a significant amount of lost opportunity because I could have replaced her with a higher producing replacement in her spot. And, you know, you can think about trading in a car or keeping it forever. There's all kinds of little examples you can come up with, but just because you can doesn't mean you should. It all depends on what your limiting constraint is. And if you didn't have any replacements, we're going to keep that cow a lot longer. But if we have replacements, we should be replacing her earlier than you might.
Football season, I guess you could think about the star quarterback at the waning side of his career. And do you start him another year so he can set records, or do you plug in the guy you drafted that's, you know, maybe going to put up better stats for this year?
Yeah, that's going to bring up a whole topic of sunk cost and my risk versus return.
Economics are a little bit different.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that's definitely true. That's actually an analogy I use quite a bit when I'm speaking in public, is that NFL roster. I love NFL football. And every year, as you mentioned, we got a new crop of seniors coming out. And when they're bigger, faster, stronger, quicker, whatever, greater skills, it puts more pressure on the existing team. And same thing happens with dairies. When we do a better job of producing better, higher quality heifers, we put more pressure on the existing cows. And so that threshold of which we target for replacement, that level of production goes up as the quality of heifers coming into the herd increases. And that's something people sometimes forget about.
Yeah, I'd also add, not just for the dairy chain, it's even for once you sell the animal to the salvage yards are also appreciating animals that can make it through the plant and have better quality. So you also are making more money on what you did sell her for. So not just for our dairy industry alone, but even for farther down our value chain, it really adds into that and plays into a huge factor of that.
And that's a really good point, Megan, because the salvage value, what we're talking about, the trade-in, and if we think about an animal leaving today, that's fairly easy to kind of quantify. But if I bring a heifer in today and I look at what her future salvage value is, I'm looking 3-4 years down the road. And if I plan to keep her even longer than that, I'm adding additional time at risk for her to die or to condemn with some other health issue, whether it's lameness or infectious disease or metabolic disease. And I'm probably putting a little bit of a damper on the predicted yield and quality of that carcass in the future, if there is a carcass there to trade in the future. But that's a really good point we're trying to draw people's attention to, is you're producing beef. It's just that we're temporarily milking her before we then harvest her, hopefully as high quality meat.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I mean, we've always talked about. Nobody likes a dead cow, like for many reasons, right? It's ethically, you know, and emotionally for the people on the farm, and obviously financially. But that financial hit is three times what it used to be now, right?
Absolutely.
So as you're pushing out productive life, like you said, if you can do it and the cows are healthy, fantastic. But the numbers would say, you know, just straight up epidemiology, she has a higher risk of death every year, right?
And so I always talk about, you got a heifer that's about to enter the herd. Number one, I think we need to remind everyone, a heifer that you have bred, raised, and calved does not automatically earn a spot in the dairy. She needs to earn it, right? She should represent an upgrade over the lowest value cow in the herd currently. And if she doesn't represent an upgrade, she needs to find a different career. But if she does represent an upgrade, that lower value cow should go elsewhere. It's that type of constant, ongoing decision making we need to try to help people realize.
Maximize profitability and herd health with early detection in animal health, reproduction, and feeding. The most advanced bolus technology and professional support from agricultural experts make this possible with SmaxTech, the health management system that future-proofs your dairy operation.
Good. Okay. Help us think through then, like if I'm going to sit down and say, okay, you guys convinced me now, I need to focus on this. This may be a weak point in my overall farm management. Get me into the nuts and bolts of how do I actually pull off figuring out where I'm at and where my opportunities are.
Well, one of the things that Megan and I talked about in the webinar before were some of the common metrics that people use. And most everyone looks at things like sold and died in the first 30 or 60 days. Okay, well, that sounds like a great goal, but number one, that's a really major lagging indicator because it's waiting for bad things to happen. Number two, a higher level of percent sold by 60 is not necessarily a bad thing if we understand why. If I'm marketing excess animals for dairy purposes to my neighbor, that's a great thing. If I'm having to sell more animals by 60 because I've got more bad mastitis or lameness, that's obviously a bad thing. But that's something we need to keep in mind. And we were talking about beef cross calves before, but guess what we're seeing these days that was not an issue 2 years ago is we've got herds that are holding on the cows that ordinarily would have been sent to beef, last lactation, that are being retained because they're carrying such a high dollar fetus. And now guess what's going to happen in a 30 and 60 day replacement risk? It's going to go up. And everybody that does that is going to argue that's a good thing. But at the same time, it's counter to what we said as, quote unquote, goals for comparison.
That's a good point. It's not necessarily a cull because of terrible health, right? It's like you held her to get the calf and then end her cull value. Yeah.
And that goes back to why we kind of changed the terminology from cull rate to replacement rate. Cull rate really has a negative connotation. And we're trying to get past that because the replacement rate is trying to get at, I've got an animal in the herd and I've got another one coming in here. Do I replace this animal with this potentially better animal or do I keep her? And so we're not talking about just culling for the sake of removal, which has a negative connotation. We're talking about how do we upgrade and constantly improve our existing dairy? How do we replace the right animals at the right time?
One thing I've run into, and I think you've helped me with before, Mike, is there's always some herds there that don't really have a stable population, right? So the other thing is if you're trying to figure out what's a reasonable target, because you have to plan, right? For heifer programs, you have to know what a target replacement rate is. How do you even see where you're at if your herd total number is not stable?
That can be a big challenging, and we can never get the numbers exactly right, which is a really big reason why we always have to have a little bit of an extra fluff or actual cushion there. But I always start with historical needs. So look at the last 2, 3, 4 years and try to understand what the replacement rate has been. Because if you think about it, if I have a stable herd, the number of animals coming in is equal to the number of animals going out. So I have to make sure I produce enough heifers that allows me to replace my expected number of animals that will be replaced, but also add in an additional buffer for those unanticipated things. Now, if I'm expanding or my herd's growing, I just have to add in that extra factor over and above what I have been producing. But one of the things I've noticed is that many herds have underestimated the percent of heifers born alive that actually make it to calving. We refer to that as heifer completion rate. And when I've looked at herds and talked to them, the knee-jerk response is, well, I've got more than 90% of my heifers that calve in. And my response is, no, I don't believe it. And in fact, 85 herd data set I put together would suggest that the averages are somewhere between 75 and 80% heifer completion. So it's typically much lower than most people think. And again, that's not necessarily good or necessarily bad. It all depends on what the reasons are and what's happening.
How do you factor in, or what do you recommend, I guess, people do in terms of if you're doing genomic testing, are people retaining, you know, that extra, 30% of heifers, doing some testing and taking 10% off the top when they get genomic data back? Or how do you see people using that?
Well, there are lots and lots of different ways people do that. Number one, I think if you've got genomics, you've got the potential now to use the genomic information to determine which females produce the next set of replacements. That's the first step, because you want to identify the best females. It's not always just your first, like, I mean, your virgin heifers. It's going to be some first, and it's going to be a few of those older cows that have survived all the crap you've thrown at them and still are in the herd, but still represent high genetic potential. So you don't want to ignore those. But once you have those numbers, you want to factor in too. I know, for example, what do I expect in terms of mortality by 75 or 90 days of age? What do I expect by 365 days? What do I expect in terms of percent of animals that fail to get pregnant? And then what percent of animals that get pregnant actually never make it to calving? Well, layer on top of that, the additional removals you want to make electively because of genomics. So it just factors into that whole heifer completion rate calculation. And but most of the herds I'm familiar with that are doing that, they're taking 2, 3, 5% by about 90 days. They might take another 2 or 3% later. So they kind of split their risk up a little bit in terms of when they take them out. And it's not necessarily a 30% chunk. It may be 5 to 8% take out from genomic perspectives. But again, you got to produce enough to allow that to happen too.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Your partner for extra animal performance, Bergenschmidt Animal Nutrition. Our Yeast 40 Ruminal and Intestinal Double Modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Accurately measure individual cow feed efficiency with the newest advancement from AffiMilk. Visit AffiMilk.com to learn more. That's AffiMilk.com. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Exalit, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Evonik Animal Nutrition, sciencing the global food challenges. Natural Biologics is using cutting-edge science to deliver cost-effective solutions for the animal health and productivity challenges you face. For conventional or organic production systems, Natural Biologics can help support rumen health and immune function, mitigate pathogens, and increase production efficiency. Visit naturalbiologics.com to learn more.
Great. Well, we've got three famous questions we always have to ask of people, and I'm excited to see what you guys come up with. So, Megan, I'm going to throw the first one at you. Do you have a favorite dairy-related book or resource that you turn to frequently?
My favorite related resource lately has been the use of AI, not always because it's correct in most cases, but just to see what it comes up with. And I know Mike and I had talked about this the other day, and I'll let Mike share his story, but I really loved what he asked AI a question and what it generated back for him. I think it's a really neat tool when used the right way. And if it has the right resources that it's pulling from, it can be exceedingly powerful. I enjoy it for just trying to expand my own vocabulary or trying to become a better professional or speaker or writer when I'm trying to do maybe internal documents. But I always find it interesting to see what it comes up with.
Yeah, I've used AI a little bit too, Barry, but it's been for different reasons. I was telling Megan the other day about using AI to generate a cartoon image for a presentation. And so I wanted this image of cows in a classroom with one answering the questions, asking a question. And so when an AI, when it came up with the image, all of them had horns. And I'm going, no, this is not a dairy cow. We don't have horns. So I had to tell the system to remove the horns. But it just goes to show that a lot of the information that AI is pulling from right now is not necessarily accurate and correct. So you've got to be careful what you get back out of it.
I agree with that. I did find a really super valuable use, though. I had a niece that I got asked to give a valedictorian speech about with a, like 2 days notice.
Oh, geez.
And so she was just reaching out to her aunts and uncles for advice. And I had ChatGPT write a 500-word valedictorian speech in the style of Dr. Evil. And it was quite good.
I love it.
I was disappointed she didn't use it, but.
Oh, that would have been great.
All right, Mike, what about, I want to hear your favorite book or resource outside of agriculture.
Well, that's going to be a pretty easy one. That's the one I use every day, and that's simply my Bible. I read that every day, so I have to put that as my number one. I do a lot of nonfiction reading, but that one comes to the top of in terms of what I hit every day.
Hopefully Wisdom, the Book of Wisdom, right, when you're doing these equations. All right, so then last question. In your collective opinion, what sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who are less successful?
I'll speak a little bit from my experience, and what I've seen is there's two key things that I really would instill in any mind that's trying to outbeat another person or something. One is the networking. It's just the power of networking and the people you meet. You've heard time and time again that this dairy industry is small, and we're really not kidding. So making strong connections with the people around you will really set you apart. And the second one I have is mentorship. Not just finding someone to be a mentor to you, but for you to give back and be a mentor to someone else. I think those are the two key things that I would really instill on anyone, is that if you have an interest to make this industry better, to find someone to invest your time in.
All right. So you stole one of mine, but that's fine. So I actually had three words for that. One, so integrity, hard work, and great mentors. So I think if you're going to be a dairy professional, you've got to obviously work hard to get to where you want to, your achievements, but you've got to do it with integrity, because to your point, Megan, this is a small industry. And if you don't have integrity, you're not going to last, and people are going to see through that pretty quickly. So you got to work hard, but do that with the right effort and the right approach and the right focus. And again, mentors, you mentioned that, but to me, a good mentor is absolutely critical. And that's one of the things I'm constantly trying to help challenge students of different ages, different stages of their development, to find someone that can help them learn the ropes correctly. Because you need it for development of your skill set, but also for continual feedback. And it doesn't stop. I still have people I talk to, a couple of key people that I rely on and turn to that are going to give me honest feedback, whether I like it or not, but they're there to help grow, because you know the old proverb is as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. So that's something I think it's important for us to keep in mind.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of organizations out there that can help, whether it's through the dairy industry or even outside the dairy industry. I'm in a Toastmasters group on weekly Tuesday nights, and it is a safe space to mess up. And so that's where I also get some trusted individuals that can help me be a better public speaker or be a better presenter, and using different words and reducing all my ums and ahs. And I love it. It's so fun to join something like that.
Great answer, guys. I love that. Good advice. Well, our guests today have been Dr. Mike Overton with Zoetis and Megan Young from Valley Ag Software. Thank you both so much for joining us for this awesome conversation.
Thanks, Barry. It's been a lot of fun for me, and I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you.
Yes, thank you so much, Barry. And thank you again, Mike, for joining us with us. We had a great conversation again.
So as a reminder, if you're interested in this topic and want a little more detail, there is a webinar freely available on the Valley Ag Software website, and go check that out. And this has been another episode of the Dairy Podcast Show. So if you're not following us yet, make sure you click the button, and then you won't miss the next episode. And until next time, we'll see you then.
Do you feel- feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.